Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us at around 5:45 for our triple option feature. A little after 5:20, we'll be joined by Marlon Favorite, who handles things at the LSU pregame and the LSU network. And Marlon, along with Hunt and the crew, will follow us as Herb Tyler and I start pregame off this coming Saturday. We'll be at Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge starting at 2 o'clock, 2 to 4:30, and then we hand it off to Fave. So we'll get his insights on the LSU Tigers. Also, too, you know, Marlon's a local guy. He was a redshirt freshman in 05 at LSU when Katrina hit. We'll get his thoughts on it because given everybody's thoughts on where they were, kind of memories and good and bad, and to just see the resilience of this community to come back from it. And so we'll talk to Marlon about that also at a little after 5:20. Let's go to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line, and let's go to GM James. James, in the huddle with Bobby, Mike and Charlie here on the Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line.
It's all good, man. Listen, I got a bit of bad news. It depends on how you look at it.
Give me the bad news first. I like that part.
Okay, well, the sort of bad news, you'll see how I mentioned it when I finish. Cam Jordan's best friend, Caleb McGarry, plays right tackle. He's out for the season, and he plays right tackle, but that means we have a left-handed quarterback who's going to be running a lot of run option with those two running backs. So, and the kid's only throwing. He's not been playing in the preseason, but in practice, he's under 60% passing. But anyway, the other bad news is, and I'm going to get to my point here, the other bad news is that since 2018, we've only had one Pro Bowl player, and that was Eric McCoy.
That's right.
Giving us the worst, basically the worst draft record since 2018. And you guys are going to be talking about the game, but to me it's the Saints lottery because I'm talking about the LSU-Clemson game because two ESPN beat writers, my guy from the Baltimore area, the area I'm familiar with, Mel Kiper, is kind of on the fence whether or not the Nussmeier kid is going to be the guy. But he did mention Nuss. He also mentions Peyton. But the other beat writer, he said that we're more likely to pick up, because they have projected draft, we're more likely to pick up Clemson kid who plays more like Baker Mayfield. So I'm looking at the quarterbacks. They got better wide receivers than us. They got an awesome defensive line. But, I think we could pull it off. But I know you guys are going to mention this already, but later on. But Scantling, former six-round pick, A.T. Perry, who I think Spencer threw a touchdown pass to, Throckmorton, who else? The offensive guard, the Eagles picked up in the trade for CeeDee Deuce. All of those guys will be available, and I pray we pick up half of them, at least half of them. You know, we need every one of those guys I just mentioned. I think, did Cedric Wilson make the team? Did he make the
team? Yes, he did. No, he made the team for now, okay? And why I say that is there's always going to be changes,
right,
James, on that 53-man roster. And your boys on ESPN, they didn't talk about Lenora Sellers?
Yeah,
okay?
That's a whiff.
Okay, my thing is, then they're not watching football. All they're doing is picking names, and they'll change that over and over again. Man, just take a look at Sellers at South Carolina. And I'm not trying to knock Nussmeier or Klubnik at all. Not trying to do it. But just take a look at Sellers as a player. So, James, in a month and a half from now, watch how much your boy from Baltimore is going to be talking about Lenora Sellers like he's Columbus and found America.
Yeah.
Yo, everybody here knows how good Sellers is. Klubnik is a really good player, too, along with Nuss. I get that part. But for you not to include Sellers in the top quarterbacks potentially for the 2026 draft, then you wrong for that. Okay, as an evaluator, you wrong not seeing what he brings to the table as a passer, and also his ability to create space with his feet. Because he can make some time and he can move around the pocket, but he got so good last year and so accurate, staying in the pocket, stepping up, making that throw, and not wanting to take off run with it all the time.
You know, this is off the top of my head, Mike, and I'll do a little bit of double checking here. But when South Carolina got red hot at the end of last year, and Lenore Sellers was a major reason why, he had an unbelievable campaign, and you're on the money, because I remember, and listen, Anthony Richardson has proved that physical traits aren't everything for a quarterback. But when we were at Manning Passing Academy, we saw Lenore Sellers. That like, is whoa. A well-built dude. He is different. And I can't wait to see what he's going to do. Mike, we're going to do pick six, I think, on Thursday. And yeah. We'll be talking about Lenore Sellers a little bit more then when we talk about that South Carolina, Virginia Tech opener this upcoming weekend. Going back to James's point, though, about some of the guys on waivers, the Kenyon Green was who he was talking about as far as the offensive guard that the Eagles had traded for. If Jeff Stoutland could not fix Kenyon Green and they had to cut him, you're not fixing Kenyon Green. I'm just being honest with you. The offensive line coach of the Eagles is one of the best coaches in all of football. They thought that maybe they could do a rehab like program for Kenyon Green and get his like reach his full potential with the Eagles, like they did someone with like Mekhi Becton last year, right? And if they cut him and he didn't make their 53-man roster, that's a player issue, man. And I don't really want any part of him, in all honesty. So,
but Charlie, he's going to get another chance. You know why?
Because he's a former first-round pick. I get it, and the talent's there.
Exactly. You're going to get another shot, just like people, Isaiah Foskey. No, I'm telling you, not only will Foskey get one more chance, he'll get a couple.
Right.
Second-round pick from Notre Dame, he's going to get numerous chances. The same thing with Kenyon Green, who we last saw. And when he was with Houston, he got beat like a drum last year, regularly. Man, and that was a lot of heat on C.J. Stroud, and a lot of it came on Kenyon's side. And I think the Eagles said, you know what, let's take a shot and see if we could rehab. I'm sure Howie Roseman had a very high grade on Kenyon coming out, had a first-round pick grade on him. And it didn't work out. And what you brought up about Stoutland, he's the best offensive line coach in pro football.
Yep.
He couldn't fix him.
I don't want him. I don't want him.
Hey, they got a lot of Dr. Phils in the world. Okay, that coach. But that's one of them you really question. But Charlie, I'm telling you, Kenyon's going to get at least two more chances to show he can't play in this league.
I don't think it's going to be here, though, Mike.
I don't know about here, but I know he is going to get opportunities somewhere else. Being a former first-round pick, just right. Like Foskey, is going to get numerous chances somewhere else because he was a former second-round pick who was productive in college. But what you saw of him here, he was so hesitant to get up the field. Almost like he was afraid he was going to make a mistake.
Yep.
Okay, and so he lacked those great instincts that you were looking for in that linebacker to immediately process where the ball is and then get in that area. And, man, I never saw it with him. Now, one of the things he did very well at Notre Dame was rush the quarterback. He got a half a sack here in 2 years. Half a sack.
He was a special teams guy, Mike, but you don't use the 40th overall pick on just a special teams contributor. It was a disappointing pick. I mean, that's just being flat out with it.
In the last 20 years, man, he's around Mount Everest for picks that did virtually nothing other than to help you a little bit on special teams. Really didn't see much action, and you got to trust him. As a coach, I remember Dennis Allen talking about last year. He's just got to cut it loose. You got to play. And he just never could get that volume button and crank it up.
We see him playing in the preseason, Mike, and he's got these opportunities to make a play, and he just never did it. Like, they gave him every chance in the world this offseason to really earn that spot on the 53-man roster entering his third year at the NFL level. And, Mike, he was a ghost. Out there, it just didn't work out. So you know, the Saints decide to cut their losses and move on. But you really look back at that 2023 draft class and just at some of the players that were selected behind Foskey, because you used the 40th overall pick on him. Second round picks, NFL draft and NBA draft are completely different.
Oh,
you're expecting to get a stud in the second round, and especially a people always talk about the top 50 prospects in a draft. And then you're talking about the premier second round pick with guys that fall out of the first round, and they're still, you know, they could have been day one selections. They decide they slide into the second round for whatever reason. That's a premium pick that the Saints used on Foskey, and it just blew up in their face.
Didn't work out, and so you know what? If you got a loss, you take it, move on. The worst thing you can do with a pick that doesn't work out is keep it, force it. And this team has done this in the past. They've kept players that you know damn well can't play. But you got to move on from somebody you know is not working out for you. We'll have more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL. We have Beyond with us, Marlon Favorite from the LSU Radio Network, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, hello somebody, Marlon Favorite from the LSU Radio Network, does pre- and post-game coverage for the Tigers. Big Fave, thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Hello somebody. What's happening, Mike?
I'm doing good, Fave. Before we start talking LSU, you grew up in this area, and, you know, it's going to be 20 years Friday, Katrina passed through. I was telling Charlie, I'm pretty sure you were a redshirt freshman at LSU at that time. Sort of memories, because, you know, kind of growing up, you know, I was way, way too young to kind of comprehend when Hurricane Betsy passed through this area, and, you know, living on the bayou, you saw it. And then we got Ida a couple years back, which really sort of trumped that a little bit too. Memories of Katrina, because I know you had family members in the area, and kind of what was the mindset at that time to see this unbelievable storm packing that Gulf, and it wasn't supposed to come here, and then all of a sudden you dead center on where it's hitting.
Oh, what I remember about that storm, I mean, we had Florida teammates. So guys like Terrell McGill and Dwayne Bowen and freshman Ricky G and Francois, you know, we were worried about their families. Well, the way it works in Miami, the land's so flat, it just rolled through. But to your point, when it got back in the water and we saw it was headed our way, and just to kind of think about how that event, like, changed everything nationally. Like, it was a national disaster. Even though we got hit and hurt locally, it was nationally. And for us, that was Coach Miles' first year there, and he don't know anything about hurricanes. So, you know, here's a guy, you know, new at a school trying to get his players acclimated to his way of coaching. And I could just remember, one thing that we remember about Coach Miles is his practices used to be long. And at that time, he didn't reduce the practice time. Now, after practice, we would go and volunteer at the PMAC because, of course, a lot of the victims were being sent to Baton Rouge. And I can just remember, and I hope she don't mind me mentioning her name, the indirect, like, snapping Shelly, our trainer had did to Coach Miles. Coach Miles was like, is there anybody else that needs to say anything? Trying to figure this whole deal out. Shelly just said, I think it's stupid that we're at practice this long and we have all this devastation going on. And, like, everybody felt her soul. And, you know, that was Coach Miles' way of, like, man, this is serious. I didn't realize this was like that. And that's one of the things I remembered about it. And just the UNO students, Tulane students, SUNO students that were incoming freshmen and already students at that school who had to come to Baton Rouge and go to Southern and go to LSU. So just so many memories. Not enough time for the phone conversation.
Fave, I think one kind of word gets thrown into the vocabulary that had never really been talked about here before, even though we in an area where, you know, hurricanes are likely. FEMA. Did you hear anybody in your family talk about FEMA before Katrina hit? Then all of a sudden, that became a big part of it. Come on, where are they at? to help people here, I live in the Bayou area, so we were 60 miles from New Orleans to the west. And, okay, we did have some wind, but we didn't have any levee break or anything like that. And I saw the same thing you saw at LSU. I saw at Nichols, people being brought in here. And it was just the look in their eyes of, I can't believe what happened, because the storm had passed. We thought, you know, we had sort of survived everything, and then the levees break.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, it was heartbreaking the way, and I've been watching the Katrina special on Hulu, and Ryan Coogler did an amazing job at, like, really capturing the stories and getting real footage of what was going on. And I just think about just how delayed people were that was working with FEMA. Like, we were really treated like half of a human. Like, we were treated in a way, like, people were treating their animals better than they were treating the people of New Orleans, the folks who couldn't get out last minute. I mean, I was thankful to be in Baton Rouge, and my family was able to come on over to stay with us. My brother was working with Energy at the time, and my Uncle Preston, so they were in and out of the city during the storm, and my brother was telling me all these different stories. At the time, my sister had to move to Dallas 3-4 years prior. So my mom and my dad was still working with Union Pacific Railroad, and they came out there by us. And I can remember teammates like Charles Alexander, his mom and dad from Brobridge, Louisiana, brought all kind of boudin and cooked sausage and all kind of seasoned chicken seasoned. I never, you know, tasted Cajun like that ever. But it was just it was great to see people come together. But yeah, to your point, it wasn't handled right. And that was the first time we ever heard of, that was the first time FEMA had to deal with something like that. So, it's just tragic.
Yeah. And man, we didn't have the levees break here on the Bayou. I mean, they held up for Ida, which was a major storm also. But some of the people that were involved to try to get some help from FEMA, I mean, they still waiting, Fave. Still waiting. I mean, it's unbelievable how, I guess, I don't know what's the best word to use about it, just how messed up the whole damn thing is to try to help people. And you're in a position to do it, and it's a tap to break every spot you get.
No doubt. It just showed how irresponsible and just how unprepared we were at the time. And it's sad to recap. It does bring back some harsh memories. And, you know, it was just a new time at LSU. Coach Saban had just left. We were there on campus adjusting to this. It was games that were postponed. I remember Arizona State was supposed to come here. We ended up having to go there. And you saw right away how strong we are here in South Louisiana. So it's sad to think of all the people we lost, even the crime. I lost a relative in Houston due to crime. You know, New Orleans folks were going all over the place, and different cities felt a certain way. And it was just, you know, just the hearts of the folks here in New Orleans to feel so displaced at the time. And I just thank God that, you know, we were able to bounce back. But that pre-Katrina New Orleans, boy, it'd never be the same.
Fave, thanks so much for recalling everything that happened at LSU. I think you got a change in life. If you don't do that in any profession, you're going to die off quickly. And a couple years back, when I heard Brian Kelly talk about, we're not going to use the transfer portal, we're just going to be select about getting a player here, player there, I told Charlie, he ain't living in the real world. That's not what's going to happen. He better get himself knee-deep in the transfer portal, because everybody else, or most everybody else, will be. Fave, I think I look at this LSU team today, they're going to probably have 8 to 9 starters that came out of the transfer portal in one offseason. Goes to show the importance of the transfer portal.
Yeah, as you said, evolution, man. Things evolve over time, and the NCAA is now mini NFL. The bottom line.
That's true.
The way the transfer portal works, it's very similar, and it's much more pressure on the players than the coaches, but it is a lot of pressure on the coaches because for the players, coaches, we're used to coaches bouncing around. That's not how it works for players all the time. And what I mean by that is, you know, these guys are deciding and wanting to go pro. And when they go sit down and interview the NFL coaches, they're like, all right, why did you leave here? Oh, because such and such this, you know, the business move. Why did you leave there? So now it looks like that player isn't trying to fight it out and compete. Well, on the flip side, with the coaches, they don't. It's hard for them to really take a vested interest into a player because he might leave once the portal opens. So that challenge has changed, and I'm glad Coach Kelly was able to evolve and start looking at this thing with an open. My co-host on Inside the Trenches, CL Nola, had mentioned Coach Kelly has softened his heart in that area to bring in players to help us get over that. Like, had he not had that mindset, right, his first 2 years, we had Jaden Daniels. What if we would have had Jaden Daniels some more weapons or, you know, get some more offensive linemen through the portal? We may have been in the college football playoffs, to say the least, but I'm glad he's catching on to it now, and I love his slogan of 1-0, something for us to really look at and something to build off here this season.
Fave, I think one of the things defensively is, and I've not understood it for the last couple of years, you're trying to reinvent the wheel with Harold Perkins. I'll be honest with you. You know what he can do as a player. You know his strength is get up the field and attack anything that's got the football in the backfield. You try to make him into a pro linebacker and all this stuff. Man, let the pros do that. You understand what he can do. He is a guy that puts it in drive, and he's up the field. And, yeah, you'll see him drop back in coverage sometimes. But, man, his strength is his ability to affect what's happening in the backfield, if it's a tackle for a loss or get after the quarterback. I'm interested to see how Blake Baker is going to use him this year. I do know one thing about Cade Klubnik. I've watched enough film on him. He ain't no stiff in the pocket. You know, if he sees a spot, he's going to take off running. My thing is, Harold, when you see that guy get the ball and he's hesitant about throwing it, you go attack him and put him on the ground. And I think I want to see more of that from Blake Baker's defense this year in using Harold Perkins in a get up the field and make a play. Because I think that they need that to upgrade their pass rush and also to cause havoc in the backfield.
I couldn't agree with you more, Mike. This is one of those situations I've talked to several scouts about Harold Perkins. Me and Brandon Taylor off air talked about this a lot. His freshman year, freshman year, Harold Perkins could come off the board day one, period. And you're right. Those years in between coming in this year, they're trying to figure out how to use him. Or let's say this, how to keep him happy. Because remember, we're in the NIL transfer portal era. So a lot of that decision-making with Harold Perkins came from to keep him happy. But now he have a guy in Coach Baker that now he's listed as star, and we have the confidence in the middle with the Wheat brothers. You can move him around. He needs to be on Arkansas game freshman year. He single-handedly, I hadn't seen an impact like that in one game out of one player since Tyrann Mathieu 2011. Season. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Best for Harold Perkins, best for the LSU Tigers defensively. Let him move around. The star is the best way to label it. If he's blitzing, he's blitzing. If he's just spying the quarterback, he's spying the quarterback. That's how you have to use Harold Perkins.
Big Fave, I wanted to ask you because it felt like all the buzz from fall camp in the past basically month or so has just been about that defensive line and how improved they are from last year. You, like, as we had mentioned earlier about the transfer players that you went out and added, but you more have supplemented that front room because you had some returning pieces, especially on like the interior. I know Coach Kelly's talked up Gabe Rutherford, but you had the transfers on the edge room like Jamari Butler and then Jack Pyburn and Patrick Payton. And then the interior, another transfer in Bernard Gooden, but you also have Dominic McKinley, Ahmad Bro. It just feels like that's a really good defensive front. I know that you're going to be going up against a good Clemson offensive line as well, but if LSU is to go up and pull off this upset at Clemson, that defensive front needs to set the tone.
Oh, no doubt. That is first, second, and third point. The defensive line has to set the tone in this game. And what I do like about this group, I spoke with Kyle Williams. We may have talked 30, 40 minutes after the spring game, and that's something he wanted these guys to build off what Coach Bo Davis was able to implement last season. Put his twist on it, but I know y'all can relate to this one. Coach P. Jenkins, that's all that cloth, right? Hello, somebody.
Yeah.
So you got a Bo Davis. When I get there, that's Pete Boy. Carl Dunbar, that's Pete Boy. You know, Kyle Williams, Pete Boy. All these are guys cut from that cloth that, you know, we adapted and adjusted up front, and you winning your gap. If you winning your gap, it's no stopping us. So I feel confident about year two of them young boys, and McKinley. I think they're going to make some strides this year. You'll have a healthy Tank Guillory. I think that makes a big difference. His experience in SEC play is going to be huge. Big 99, look, I see they're bringing 18 back. Hello, somebody. 7 is a number. But, you know, Big 99, that's a big dog number two now. And I like Bernard Gooden, who, in my opinion, could be very stout and versatile in terms of pass rush, interior rush for the Tigers. So that y'all already know. I named my show Inside the Trenches for this reason, baby. I'm going to be watching that front, that D-line, and I'm telling y'all, it is almost it's a magnet. If that D-line is getting after the quarterback, getting sacks, pressures on the quarterback, quarterback hits, tackles for loss, that energy translates over to the offense, and shoot, and that's 4-3. 4-3 is the average speed in the wide receiver core. We don't have to talk about that.
Man, they got some talent there. The other part, too, Fave, and I'll let you go after this, is to go out in the transfer portal and to get the two safeties, and to Marcus Cooley, A.J. Ooh, yeah. Halsey. You know, I scouted Halsey and Cooley because I thought, with Halsey, I thought he might come out early. I was sort of tipped that he might. He decided to play another year after starting at New Mexico and then going to Houston, and then he decides to come to LSU. They have not had this type safety play in a long time, to have two guys of that ilk. And I think that's really going to help them out defensively, to have Cooley and Halsey that have been starters and good starters to very good starters at the collegiate level.
I couldn't tell y'all guys how much that matters, especially having veterans in that position. You know, when that game gets serious, it's the fourth quarter. When we miss a sack up front, we're going to have some guys to be able to not only cover over the top, but play smart, use your eyes, communicate. Those things really matter at that position. And you look at a guy like Cooley, just his size alone, and he's young, right? Was third year in college. I think he might have redshirted, but he's traveled. Again, NC State, Maryland, he's played meaningful reps in college ball. And that really matters. So, and Coach Raymond, let me tell y'all something. I trained out there at Elite Training Academy in Baton Rouge. I got D linemen we work out there. Coach Raymond was out there a couple of mornings. You know, I get out there early. I have them boys 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning. He had his secondary in there, putting that work in. Skills, coverage, teaching points, angles. I said, man, that looked like Coach Raymond with Coach Chevis Jackson. Jonathan Z9, them boys. And that's what I like to see. So I'm excited about LSU's defense. I don't want to get too excited, hello somebody, but I think we're going to for sure shock a lot of folks.
Fave, thanks so much for joining us, man. Look forward to hearing you this coming Saturday as LSU plays Clemson. And your guy and I, me and Herb, we got to start it off, you know, at 2 o'clock. And I think Herb got all kind of stories about you and him at the Chicken Festival.
Yeah, Herb, shout out to Herb and his family, man. They came out and they enjoyed my whole set, man. We talked this Saturday. But, yeah, I appreciate it, man. That's my dog.
All right. Thank you, Marlon. Appreciate it. Thank you so much. Marlon Favorite, always a character, great stories, and certainly things talked about in that Katrina time and talking about the LSU Tigers. Big hopes for the Tigers this year to see if they can pull off the upset against Clemson. This coming Saturday, you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL at 6:30. We'll be back with Triple Option right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, it's our Triple Option feature. Myself along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. Steve, you up to bat.
Well, Mike and Charlie, a guy that we have on the show frequently, Stan Verrett, and also Neil Everett, they're going to be working together on a new show after leaving ESPN SportsCenter. They were both co-hosting on SportsCenter from 2009 to 2023. Everett left the network in 23. Verrett just left earlier this year as ESPN shut down his studios in Los Angeles. So now they're going to be doing a show called Stan and Neil, that's going to be on Twitch, which I'm going to have to do some research on. I know it's mainly, as far as I know, for gamers when they're streaming their games on Twitch, the platform there. But it's going to start September 9th, air on Tuesdays and Fridays. And Verrett said, look, the word's out. We're going to start live on Twitch, then post to YouTube and other platforms same day. Our main goal, have fun. Joined the show, starts September 9th, and said that he was trying to remain in Los Angeles after those L.A. studios closed down for ESPN and realized he's going to have to kind of change with the time. So we're going to have Stan Verrett on the Twitch platform. Like I said, I got to learn a little bit more about that, guys.
Yeah, when I asked him, what you going to do, he said, Mike, I got something in the works, but I don't know a damn thing about it. I'm like, same. Okay. I told him, okay, hey, get in line. I mean, that is part of life. You got to be able to evolve in certain things. So, Charlie, you
guys,
next.
I will be real quick with this one. I am a very happy camper today because it is the return of one Yordan Alvarez to the Astros lineup.
Oh,
batting cleanup
goodness.
And playing left field in his first game since May the 3rd. One of the most feared and the very best hitters in the MLB is back, gentlemen. And I am very, very excited for the return of Mr. Alvarez after he's been dealing with hand issues for months now. Astros still have some injury concerns, but getting Yordan back makes me feel soft and fuzzy inside.
Thank God football's here. I got nothing to say about MLB right now.
Guys, when I looked at the Saints cuts and who they kept, and there is always changing the roster, but you know, you see how that defensive front shapes up with Carl Granderson, Chase Young, Ryan Brisset, Davin Godshaw, Nathan Shepard. They kept the old vet, Jonathan Bullard. Christian Boyd, same thing with Cam Jordan, Vernon Broughton, who I thought played really well that final preseason game, third-round pick from Texas, and Chris Rump II. His dad is the defensive line coach at Clemson. The one guy I thought had a real shot here was Fadil Diggs. Mm-hmm. He didn't quite make it. I'm sure they would like to bring him back on the practice squad. And Jonah Williams is sort of the guy that if something happens, hey, I'll make a phone call. Jonah, hey, we want you back. But if you look at where they actually have talent and some depth, it's along that defensive line in that front. And you see it. I always say this. Deuce and I talk about this all the time. The hard cuts are not when you got talent and depth. The hard cuts is when you don't. And what are you going to do about your offensive line? You did make one move. I expect they will make another move or maybe even two along the offensive line to try to upgrade that area. Who knows when Trevor Penning comes back. And, man, again, it's not a spot that you can sustain injuries and not have a major drop-off. We saw it last year. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break. Finishing off hour number two of sports talk on the Big 870 WWL. When we return, Steve Geller and Charlie Long, they'll have on the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. He'll give his takes on the Saints cuts and some of the maneuvers they made today and what possibly can happen over the next 48, 72 hours. We'll be back with more sports talk right after this news break here on the Big 870 WWL.